is 12.
Hey folks, welcome back to another episode of This Week in Photo. I'm your host, Frederick Van Johnson. Today, my friend, Mr. Jesse Dittmar, New York City-based photographer, is on the hot seat. I've interviewed Jesse before, talking about his work, dealing with celebrities. Some of them are cantankerous. Some of them are easy to work with, but all of them are fun and photographic. We talked about that. That is not what this discussion is about. This discussion is about this weird thing that's been in the news and all over the place called NFT or non-fungible tokens. So we're going to figure out, we're going to do a kind of a who, what, why, when thing around that and talk about, and let's put the grain of salt in the room right now. Jesse, you're on a journey as well. You're learning more and more about this stuff, and you don't purport to be an expert. You purport to be someone who has made them and is more, you're further on the journey than probably the most of the rest of us. So we're going to pick your brain and figure out, you know, how it is, where you are. You're essentially our canary in the coal mine right now.
So. Absolutely, Frederick. Yeah, I'm happy to be it. Happy to be here. Happy to be your canary.
Good, good. Well, welcome. Welcome to the show, man. This is a lot to squeeze into about an hour here. So let's kick it off with just a little bit of background on who you are as a photographer for folks that may not have seen any of the other interviews that we've done. Who is Jesse Dittmar? And then we'll jump into NFTs after that.
For sure. I'm a portrait photographer, primarily a celebrity portrait photographer working for the New York Times, Washington Post, LA Times. I've been published in every major magazine and publication that's out there. And I'm working for other brands like Hulu and Apple for advertising as well. And I photograph some of the, you know, most influential and interesting and, you know, difference makers of our current culture, from politicians to actors to authors and artists and kind of anybody you could imagine. Some of the big hitters like Denzel Washington and Tom Brady and Serena Williams. I just photographed Andrew Yang last week, and all kinds of people.
So if anybody can speak to this, you know, you've got a lot of stuff floating around out there, a lot of images that are famous, images that are inherently non-fungible. Let's start there. Just the term non-fungible token, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, my and I'm playing the layman in this show, right? I've done a fair amount of research, so I kind of understand it, but I'm going to ask questions from a layman's perspective. So non-fungible is kind of, the way I see it, correct me if I'm wrong, is something that is unique, right? So I am inherently non-fungible because I am one of one Frederick Van Johnson, I think, in the universe, right?
One would hope.
If you believe in multiverse, then there's infinite numbers of me, but in this reality, there's only one Frederick Van Johnson. So I'm non-fungible.
As you're alluding to, Frederick, it can get spacey real quick.
It
can get out there real quick, even in the first sentence of trying to explain yourself as non-fungible. You can start saying, maybe there are more of me somewhere. So yeah, this conversation has the ability to get out of hand really fast.
But I
like to try to boiling it down has its problems, but I like to try to boil it down as simply as possible and just kind of try to relate it to the real world. And something that's a non-fungible token, it's basically a serial number corresponding to an object. Sorry about that. I don't know if you can hear that giant truck in the background outside my office laying on the horn, but that seems like that's helpful to everyone involved. So
that's scary.
There we go. Okay. But yes, a serial number corresponding to a physical object is basically what you're talking about with a non-fungible token. There can be multiple copies of it, as in like an edition size. It's a really pliable piece of technology and concept. It's not super strictly defined on the base level of the way we're talking about it. I like to think, when I'm thinking about non-fungible tokens, a similar experience to going and purchasing a piece of art in a gallery. There might be multiple copies of it, but you own that one copy. And it's very similar to how a non-fungible token can be used.
Yeah, and that and I don't want to get into the, you know, because you're right, it's a line, it's a minefield of trying to define it and put it in a bucket. But the overall kind of promise of what NFTs are, from my standpoint, it seems like it's almost like a driver's license or a passport for something, right? Yes. Where you can prove that thing is what it is because it has that identification. So, and that thing could be anything from an MP3 file to an image in your case to a video file, like the short video clips that you do. All those things can have their own little driver's license to prove who they are and move around an ecosystem and then have funds attached to them. Because once you can prove what it is, you can then say, this thing is worth this much money. Give me your money and I'll give you this thing. Is that the Fred Flintstone kind of definition?
The beginning of that is absolutely right. And not even just a driver's license to prove, like attached to the thing to prove what it is, mm-hmm. but also the transaction history from the beginning of, from its creation. That's what the blockchain promises, is that when you create a piece of art on the blockchain, a non-fungible token on the blockchain, you see where it's created. That information is dispersed across many different computer systems, the whole purpose of the blockchain, and you see where that thing goes its entire life. There's no hiding it. There's no taking it off the blockchain and putting it back on the blockchain. And so not only are you having some sort of identification, but you're also having a written in digital stone path of ownership and creation of the object, yeah. which is one of the key elements to it. You know, there's no such thing as art forgery and non-fungible tokens, because if I'm trying to sell you a Picasso NFT, you can go back and see who created it and where it's been the entire time. And I can't just create a Picasso NFT in my own wallet and be like, oh, here it is. You'd be like, well, that mm-hmm. you made that. Yeah. So as well as it being kind of an identifier and a way to serialize items, it also is a way to track the movement of the item.
But that's one of the things I wanted to get into, just sort of getting an understanding around a couple of things. So the layman, and I would consider myself a layman in this, you know, when I hear the word blockchain, I start seeing the Matrix, sure. right? And like, okay, I don't understand, what is a blockchain? Sure. It's all software, it's all on servers in the ether, which is, in my opinion, inherently insecure because hackers, right? So sure. What does it mean? Like, and I know that's not true. I mean, yeah, I know that it is secure, but at the same time, I'm thinking, you know, can it be cracked? If I invest in this, am I investing in something that's being built on quicksand, kind of? You know, what?
You're definitely not investing in something that's built on quicksand. The easiest way to explain the blockchain is that it's a public ledger. It's mm-hmm. the equivalent of, if you go down to the, if you're old enough to remember going down to the public library to look up a hard copy of, you know, a real estate license for the town. But instead of just it being just in the library, everyone in the town who has a house has a copy of it. And when you yeah. change one person's copy, all of the copies get changed. And so therefore there's no central place to hack. There's no central place to steal. There's no central place to change. And so it's a public ledger, and the information is dispersed across all the computers that are on that network. Mm-hmm. You know, speaking of it in more depth than that is going to get out of my knowledge base. And, as far as, you know, like with anything that's a new technology, you can't predict what's going to happen in the future. You can't predict that someone's not gonna be able to come up with some technology in the future to potentially hack the blockchain or whatever that looks like, but right now that doesn't exist.
Yeah, that's interesting. That I like the way you put that. That it's the whole public ledger is that was a missing piece for me, because I knew that there was a public sort of ledger thing out there, but I was thinking more along the lines of Napster and those sorts of distributed computing platforms where you download a thing. Because the ledger told you where to get that thing or get pieces of it, then it assembles it on your computer. This is different, right? So this is like you got the library, you got the Dewey Decimal card catalog on your computer, and whenever that changes somewhere else, yours changes. Is that yes.
That's as far as I know, that's exactly right. And and in that, there's no hiding on the blockchain. Like, I think one of the, you know, you can hide in that you don't have to tell people that you own the wallet that everything's in, that you own the receptacle of cryptocurrency or of NFTs or whatever. But everyone knows that that wallet, whoever's it is, owns those things. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's, sorry, I'm just going to close this out here. So it's really, that's what I'm talking about with the transparency. You know that, you know what wallet created an item or what wallet owns Bitcoin or Ethereum or whatever. And everyone knows that. And it's a public ledger. It's publicly available code, mm-hmm. knowledge, whatever.
Yeah. I'm wondering. So when it, there's so many tangents, I'm trying to keep this, you know,
yeah. like,
between
this
the galaxies.
This can get really, I mean, listen, I think that people, if you're a really, really beginner, like you don't know what a blockchain is, you don't know what Bitcoin is, you don't know what Ethereum is, before you continue on this podcast, perhaps go get an explainer on that stuff, because if you know what that stuff is, NFTs are really easy. It's just a natural extension of all of the crypto space. If you don't know what that stuff is, it's a learning curve. It's a big learning curve. And it's going to be hard to talk about NFTs if mm-hmm. you don't have kind of a base knowledge of how the technology and space operates, like a real base knowledge, not a code knowledge, but just an understanding.
Yeah. Yeah. The fundamentals of it. Yeah. So let's talk about the, why you made the jump into NFTs. Looking at, you know, you've got a gallery up there on OpenSea, you've got still photographs and motion photographs, and you're in it, right? And you've sold some. So you've got an MBA in NFT right now. Right? So what is that? So why are you jumping in? There's tons of photographers that have said no. You said yes, and you're in. Why?
Yeah, because I'm interested in the technology, regardless of my photography. I thought I was kind of in the space a little bit. I mean, we're talking like little bit. Definitely, you know, some people are very in it, and I'm in it. But you know, it's not my whole life. But I heard rumors of crypto art in late last year, in the fall of 2020, and that those words piqued my interest, because I was like, oh, I like crypto and I like art and I do those things. So what is this thing? Mm-hmm. And I looked into it, and I kind of just had it in the back burner, because I think that honestly, a lot of the art in the NFT space is just not my thing. It's just not my taste. Mm-hmm. And then the barrier to entry to get art up onto these platforms is depending on the platform, somewhere between high and very high, especially if you're starting from ground zero. So I had it on the back burner, but I kept hearing more and more things about it. And I saw different platforms use it for different ways. Like I'm a sports guy. I saw how NBA Top Shot started using it, and I started to like mess around on that. And so I started to understand the usability and the actual like end usability of something like NFTs. Mm-hmm. And then I just said, after NBA Top Shot started going off and I was kind of watching that closely, I just started going, you know what, I need to just try this out, because I think it's the future. I think that the technology, the way that the technology works with NFTs, and specifically smart contracts, which are basically a if this then that computer algorithm. So if I send you my NFT, you send me $300, and the thing doesn't happen unless they both happen. That's a smart contract, mm-hmm. a simple one. I think that that's where our industry is going to be eventually. I don't know when it will be that way, but I think that when you license a picture on Getty, it's going to be via a smart contract or using the technology that smart contracts use. I think that when you buy a piece of art in a gallery off the wall, you may get the physical item, but you're also going to get the digital NFT that's tied to that item to prove ownership. I just see our industry and the world at large moving towards adopting this technology pretty ubiquitously. I don't know if it will be Ethereum. I don't know if it will be something different or what it will be called or what the, you know, there's already like 10 or more players in the space for showing your NFTs and selling your NFTs. I don't know which one's going to win. But I do know, or I feel very confident that the concept will win. And the concept is going to be how we're doing things. So therefore, because of that, and because I felt strongly about that, I said to myself, let me get into this. Let me try this. Let me try this out and let me put my stuff up there and let me see if it works. And let me see what kind of process this is like. Let me get in on the ground floor and make sure I'm ahead of this.
But the other side of that is you are Jesse Dittmar, right? And you've got a long list of celebrities and other notable people behind you or in your body of work, right? That can either drive traffic to your NFT efforts or otherwise you may have, you know, there's a group of people that know this is Jesse Dittmar. I want one of these pieces of art. Not everybody is a Jesse Dittmar, you know, some of us are Frederick Van Johnson, you know, that are normal mortals on the planet. Is it a chicken and the egg situation where you have to have an audience in order to make a go of NFTs, or do you build NFTs in order to create an audience that wants them?
I think it depends on your goals. You know, my goal was not specifically to make another revenue stream. I mean, it's nice that I sold one of my NFTs and that more will likely sell in the future. But I got into it because of the possibilities that NFTs open for my work and just in general. So like if someone is saying to themselves, oh, well, geez, I make photographs and other people are making money on this and I should make an NFT gallery because I can make money too. I would take a hard pause and ask yourself, is that really viable? Because, you know, it's at its extreme infancy, this space, extreme infancy. The things that are successful at their space are most honestly categorized as memes. Like those are the things that are selling for a lot of money. And that's because the people with a lot of money in this space are crypto billionaires who got on the crypto train way early and have all this wealth. And you're not seeing someone come off the top rope who made their money in the physical world and pay $10 million for a weird GIF of Trump with a Bitcoin symbol. That's what's selling. So you got to know your audience. You know, the audience is not mainstream yet. It is not. The biggest problem I had with starting my NFT venture here was the fact that no one who was a fan of my work before me starting NFTs was able to bid on my work. It all came from people in the crypto space. Because of how hard it is to get into the space if you are not onboarded yet. It's just not easy. If you're onboarded, it's very easy. But I have a sizable reach on some social platforms, and I just got lots of comments from people being like, I just couldn't do it. I couldn't figure it out. And that is completely legitimate criticism, in my opinion.
Yeah, and that's like many technologies, right? Whether you go back to even AOL, you know, people trying to figure out how to get online with AOL and get or CompuServe and get into the CB chat or whatever. And there's barriers to entry and then rewards for those who are able to climb that particular mountain. And then there's, you know, just looking back on my decades, the democratization of that technology where it comes down and becomes easy. And it usually seems to take a catalyst to make that happen. Like in the case of NFTs, do you think if an Amazon decided to say, you know what, we're gonna start selling limited edition prints for artists and et cetera, and using NFT as the background or backend or maybe some other thing that they come up with to legitimize that space and make the onboarding as easy as clicking a box on your Amazon profile or something, is that what we need? Like a big billion dollar you know, $1 trillion company to dive in and wave its wand?
I don't know if they need to be as big as Amazon, but it's the proof of concept is there. Again, I keep coming back to NBA Top Shots. Like NBA Top Shots is easy. You can put in your credit card and now you own an asset on the blockchain. There's a lot of, issues with them and they're still in beta, but it is possible. It's just a matter of someone doing it. I guess, I mean, I'm not a programmer, but I foresee a world in which that friction to entry is going to decrease. It's just a tough conundrum because everyone who's in on the blockchain are diehards over what the technology provides, which is complete transparency and no need for a third party to be an arbiter and no need for a third party to basically facilitate the transaction. And that's what the blockchain promises. As soon as you bring in an NBA Top Shots or an Amazon or an Apple that is going to start being the facilitator and arbiter of those transactions, the people in the space get very, very up in arms, rightfully. So I think that it's going to take some kind of compromise and just general evolution of the technology. And we're going to come to a place where you're using the blockchain technology for this stuff, but who knows exactly how the entry into the space will be, but the friction will have to come down because it's just such an enticing technology that can be used for so many different purposes. And it's being used by a sliver of the population right now.
Yeah. It feels really new. Like you and I spoke before, it feels like the evolution of the drone or UAV space, right? Where before it was in the early days, it was a bunch of nerds in their garages building these things out of erector sets and all this other stuff and flying them and crashing them. Then DJI and other companies like that entered the mix. And now you can buy one and, you know, be flying in 5 minutes and never crash, right? So I think it's the early adopters, and the people that are early adopters are typically the winners, right? It's the, I should have invested in Tesla when it was at so-and-so, right? So we're kind of at that level. I wonder, you know, future facing a little bit. I want to talk actually, before we get to the future facing stuff, I want to talk about sort of practical applications for photographers today on approaching NFT and get your thoughts on that. And what I mean is I've had some conversations as recently as a couple of days ago with a friend of mine. And we were talking about, he was basically saying, well, if I create one and I put it up there, what if I like it and I want to keep it and I don't want to sell it? And my layman's analogy was, why don't you approach it as kind of like being commissioned to do a piece of work or to do some art, but the buyer is not there yet, right? You're kind of building it on spec and adding a price to it, kind of like graffiti. Right? Somebody commissioned you to do the graffiti. You don't own it anymore, but you've done it. And now it's the work is done. What would you say to that? Like as a way to approach the idea of, I don't want to give away ownership, or I do want to give away, or I want to sell it. It just, that seems confusing right now.
Again, the best way to think about it is like art on a gallery wall. Mm-hmm. So if you're a painter and you're painting and someone's taking your painting away, that's different than, it just has a different application than photography. And you know, when you're selling a painting on a gallery wall, you're not selling the copyright to that painting. You're selling the object. And it's the same thing with an NFT right now too. So, you know, your friend who's a photographer, they have every right to do whatever they want with that image. They just don't own the physical NFT anymore. Right. I think a really concept that you have to get past, that's kind of a struggle for people to wrap their heads around, is the fact that people will consider an object that only exists digitally to have the same value as material objects that exist in the physical world. And that's a really weird thing to think about and wrap your head around. But yes, someone is basically saying, I will pay you money for a piece of code that is tied to or contains a JPEG in it, even though that JPEG can be duplicated digitally infinite amount of times. It's a strange thing to wrap your head around, but that's where certainly some people are at, and where I think our society is going to go at large in the future. I think, you know, digital ownership will be very similar to physical ownership of things. Yeah. And things can exist in a digital only space, and people won't think that's weird. And it's really weird to talk about now, but I don't think for my kids, it's going to be weird. I think that it won't.
I wonder if we're, like you said, we're just kind of in this early formation of the solar system days, right? Where things are just kind of figuring out their orbits and all that. And when I zoom out and look at other technologies that are exciting, like VR and augmented VR, you know, you've got Second Life out there with millions of users that exist in their daily lives inside of a completely virtual environment, interacting with people that they've never ever shook hands with in the real world, or even had a Zoom call like this with. It's all been digital. And then you look at augmented VR with, you know, alleged products from Apple that are going to enable us to put on glasses and see things that other people can't see, overlaid on the real world. I wonder how NFTs play into that. For example, in a digital or VR existence, does it start making sense that I've built my little virtual house in there? Now I have an original Jesse Dittmar hanging on the wall in my house, you know, or even with augmented VR, only certain people that I allow to see this beautiful $10,000 piece of work on my wall can see it, right? Is that, that seems like that's where it starts gelling, because then digital within digital makes sense. Digital in the physical, people start thinking, well, you know, iTunes can sell the same song 20 million times. It's the same digital file that everybody gets, you know. So what do you think future-wise?
I hesitate to speculate too much on that, because I mean, I just think that's way too hard. Who knows what, you know, remember when Google Glasses was a thing and then it just totally bombed, you know, but then the Apple AirPods is a thing and it's a massive hit, and they're kind of like similar objects. I mean, you can get so much information from your Apple AirPods. It's definitely wearable technology. They're not just headphones. Yeah. So it's hard to predict what technologies will stick and hit. I'm not going to pretend like I can, but I do feel strongly that smart contracts on the blockchain, which are what NFTs basically are a part of, will be a part of whatever it is. That they will be, some iteration of them will exist and be the way that we transact, is my hypothesis. So, and art is a way of that, you know, the way we're going to display their art. I don't know, you know, right now I sell prints with my NFTs, because I don't think we're there yet. I don't think that we're at the point yet where most people are like, hey, I own this NFT on my computer and I'm going to project it on the wall. And like, that's going to make me seem like I have, you know, exclusive wealth. I think that most people still want to put physical things on their walls, and most people still want to be recognized for the physical things that they own. So I tie my NFTs to physical prints, but I can't say that that's how it might be in the future. It very well might not be. It's hard to say.
It's too early, but it's exciting to just kind of think about a future, future like that, where things could just exist and be manipulated and transferred completely in the ether. And, you know, I could give you something with my digital avatar and have it have some real value to it that's transferable.
Well, that exists now in video games. You know, I'm not a gamer, but people freak out over skins they have and items they have. And these items are already on the blockchain. Like, this stuff already exists on a very niche, nerdy level, and it's proof of concept there, and it works. Like, people pay a lot of money for this stuff that are not just crypto heads. Like, these are gamer heads, which, I mean, I don't know, whatever, but that future is certainly possible. I don't know whether society at large will adopt it, but
Yeah, we'll see. You know, it could go in any direction right now, which is so interesting. And there's controversy around NFTs, you know, with the power consumption and all that stuff, which I don't even want to get into because I don't even understand any of that stuff. I know there's a shortage in graphics cards and all that. So that's a completely different sort of glasses half empty kind of discussion about NFTs.
I say pick your battles to those people. Yeah. Like, come on. You know, yeah, of course. Like, is this the hill we're dying on for the power consumption issue? Like, I don't know.
Right. Yeah. So yeah. And at the very least, you should, even if you believe in all that stuff and you're like, okay, well, this is going to end in society as we know it, you should probably understand how it works at a deep level. Right?
Yeah.
So it you can form an argument power. Versus just sharing, you know, articles and stuff. You could really understand, having gone through and made one, to understand how it all works and how all the pieces fit together, then argue. Right. So
I've done that, and it was a super valuable experience for me. I'm going to be offering for the foreseeable future NFTs with every single new portrait that I put into the world.
That's cool.
And have it just be part of my workflow from now on.
You know, on that, that's a good segue into my next question for you, Jesse Dittmar. So when photographers look at this, they're like, okay, I can harvest my existing library of content or whatever and make NFTs out of those. What another way to look at it or approach it would be to create a purpose-built series of images that are only available via NFT. So as kind of your experiment to go through, I'm only going to create this series of cinemagraphs and they're only available by NFT and put some sort of scarcity play in there. Would that be, I mean, is that viable just to lean into it from that direction and just create a body of work that's destined for crypto?
Totally. You can do whatever you want in this space. You know, I think that it's totally viable, viable to do something like that. But, you know, it's hard to know why things catch fire and why things get popular. You know, the most popular artist in the space, Beeple, you hear him on interviews and he kind of thinks his work is bad. He doesn't really understand it, you know, and it's just so, you know, I can't tell you what's going to be popular in the space. You know, I think that I can tell you what is currently popular in the space, and that is, like I said, like a lot of meme stuff, a lot of crypto art, like art that references crypto, a lot of celebrity and crypto celebrity people, like anything that, you know, anything that gains internet traction is big in the space. You know, Jack Dorsey sold his first tweet as an NFT for whatever it was, $2 or $9 million or something. So, you know, so you can sell a tweet, you know, you can sell anything. If you have an idea, you can tie it to NFT and who knows what's going to happen. And because the space is so early, there's a lot of novel ideas out there for sure. So I wouldn't limit anyone's creativity or stifle anyone's ideas in regards to using NFTs to make art. I'm excited about it.
Yeah, it's creative. I mean, the sky's the limit right now. So figure it out and be the guy that or girl that did this thing, right? And
known
for that. It's so interesting. There's so many directions this is going. I like the limited edition kind of, okay, I'm going to build a limited edition series of this and I'm shooting it specifically for that. And maybe that's my canary in the coal mine of, you know, I'm going to make these a set of 6 NFTs and go through the process and document how I did it. Right. And
and
see where things come out at the other side and then make a determination on if it's all BS or if it works or if it's great. Is the future of things to come or is it the harbinger to Mad Max? So make your own determination. You know, it's one of the questions that pops up a lot about NFTs, and a lot of it comes from ignorance, of course, but the idea of security. Like if I buy one of your prints, you know, and you give me the NFT with it or vice versa, I buy one of your NFTs and I get the print with it, I hang that print on my wall. I invite a couple of people over to my house. A couple of them are celebrities, right? Celebrity takes a photo of my original Jesse Dittmar on the wall and then makes an NFT from that. Now it's, let's call it, you know, Kim Kardashian's photo of Andrew Yang as photographed by Jesse Dittmar, and it's now NFT. Are we going Inception on this now, or like, have you thought about
a little?
That? Like,
I mean, now you're talking about. Now we're talking like we're in a college class talking about art copyright and and Richard Prince and like, you know, his whole shtick is kind of exactly what you're talking about. So it's doable and it's out there, and I'm sure someone will continue. It will do it. Then you can talk about whether that NFT could hold up in a court of law for copyright infringement, which it may or may not, depending on, you know,
derivative works law comes
exactly
into play,
yeah
right?
Exactly. Yeah. Derivative works law and whether it's derivative or not. But I mean, I don't think of it like that. Your brain's going to explode, you know,
right.
Make your art to make your art. You know, if anyone's
which
going
is what
into
I love
this,
about you, that's awesome. You know?
if anyone is going into this being like, oh, I'm worried that someone's going to buy my, I'm worried that if I buy a Beeple NFT that someone's going to take a picture of it and sell that. Like, get your NFT because you like the art. If you're talking about buying NFTs, buy the NFT because you like the art and because you think the artist has legs and you think it's worth it to you. Then don't worry about it beyond that. Like, you don't go into NFTs buying NFTs to think that you're going to make a quick buck on it, because you probably won't. And don't go into NFTs trying to sell NFTs thinking you're going to make a quick buck on it, because again, you probably won't. Now you might, but you know, do it, treat it like you would treat anything that you purchase, and buy it for a reason. Other than the, unless you're, you know, a trader of, you know, like a stock trader or something. But, you know, I think that you buy an NFT and someone could take a picture and put that and make that an NFT, and all of a sudden that's its own thing. But the reality is the NFT, the non-fungible token, lives in your digital wallet. No one can get it. No one can get it unless they hack your wallet. And the only way they're going to do that is if they know your key and your like password, which is really hard to do unless you give it to somebody.
Are you the guy, like, how do prices get determined for NFTs? Do you put a price tag on it, or is
you set your own prices, do whatever you want?
So I could go through my library, for example, I could make myself a virtual NFT millionaire right now and go through and pick 1,000 prints and price them all at roughly $1,000 NFT wise. And now that body of stuff is worth $1 million. So I could say my net worth is theoretically $1 million, right? Though no one has bought it.
So I think that's like, you know, it's worth what someone will pay for it.
Yeah.
So
right.
Just because it's basically you're saying you think your worth is $1 million, but that's what you think. I don't know if that matters. It matters if someone else thinks it.
Yeah.
You know, if you're thinking about Shark Tank, you know, like if this is like going into Shark Tank saying, oh, my business is worth $5 million. And Mark Cuban's like, no, it's not. We're not going to give you, we're not giving you that.
More like $5. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we're almost out of time, man. Like, we've talked about this a couple of times. We always run out of time because there's so much.
Oh, we could keep talking about it. Yeah.
Yeah. There's like
a lot
you
of different
said,
ways you can go.
Like you said at the beginning, you know, folks that are watching and listening to this podcast later, the onus is on you to go and get educated and dive in. There's a lot of information out there that evolves and gets introduced every day. Don't listen. Don't read one article that says something negative and take that as gospel.
The best way to educate yourself is just to try to do it. Is just to say, okay, if you have the financial ability to have a couple $100, and just say, hey, I'm going to figure out how to get a digital wallet. I'm going to figure out how to get Ethereum into my wallet. I'm going to figure out how to go on OpenSea. I'm going to buy a piece of crypto art for $1, which exists.
Yeah.
And just like get into how it works. And then that's all the education that you need. I think that you have to just educate by doing. Before I did this, My knowledge on this space has grown exponentially since I've done it. Before I did it, I kind of had a foggy idea and I kind of knew what was going on, but I didn't have practical knowledge, which I now have. And that's honestly not because I did any additional, you know, like heavy research. I just did it. And now I know what I need to know in order to have done it.
Now you're an expert. Yeah.
Well,
and in comparison to some people,
I am, but in comparison to others, I'm a plebe. So, you know, it depends on who you're talking to.
Remember that movie, Catch Me If You Can, starring Leonardo DiCaprio? Yeah, it's like that. And he said they interviewed the real Frank, whatever his name is. And he was talking about teaching philosophy or something at some Mormon school or something. And they were like, how did you manage to do that? And he said, all I had to do was read one chapter ahead and go ahead and talk about it. Same thing. As long as you're one chapter ahead on this stuff, you're an expert. Yeah. Okay. So let's wrap this up. We'll end the recording in just a second here and then move into the Q&A with the folks that are watching live. But the block and tackle piece that has me curious is a lot of people, when I say a lot of people, I'm using it in the political terms, like a politician, sure, meaning myself, is asking this question. So a lot of people say or think that the creating NFTs is analogous to copyright, meaning I could take this block of 5,000 images that I have and upload them somewhere and generate 5,000 NFT serial numbers like I can through the US, you know, copyright office. Is it that simple to create the NFT, or are these much more intentional, kind of like, okay, I made one, now next, go on to the next one? What's been your experience with that?
I'm not really certain I understand your question. It sounds like you're asking, can you like batch make NFTs?
Yeah,
basically. How easy is it to make them?
Yeah.
You know, as we said before, there's a lot of different platforms out there. I only have experience with what I have on OpenSea. I only made like 20 or so so far, and now I'm doing it kind of on an individual basis. Mm-hmm. I can't speak to whether there's like a batch upload option. It wouldn't surprise me if there was. But you know, I don't necessarily see the value in that yet on doing something like that. I think eventually that's smart, because I think it's a way to prove ownership of an image, like ownership of a license of an image, is that it's an NFT and it gets like sent to people.com for a year, and then they hold it for a year in their wallet, and that's part of the smart contract, and that way you know they have the ownership of it. So like, I could see something like that in relation to copyright working out in the future. But yeah. No, I wouldn't go and upload like 5,000 NFTs per se. I would go up and just like, you know, feel out the space, feel out what's right for you. I don't think it can't designate copyright, except in the fact that if you can prove that you are the owner of the wallet that minted all of them, then obviously, and you can prove that you're the owner of the copyright, then if anyone else mints that picture, they would be in violation of your copyright technically. But you know, I wouldn't necessarily use it as you know, talking to me, like my feelings on like letting the idea of copyright dominate my thinking is pretty low. I just try not to worry about it, because it's just an impediment to me making more art. I'm not like trolling the internet trying to figure out who's stealing my photos, because frankly, I've got better uses of my time, and the money is so little that it's just not worth it. So, yes. So I don't think a ton about copyright most of the time. I'm thinking about how to try to make more good work,
which is awesome.
I don't consider this as a copyright tool per se. I consider it as a proof of ownership.
Yeah, there you go. So yeah, which begs the question, should the creation of an NFT be at the end of any post-processing workflow? Right. Should everything you do going forward that you would post online or otherwise be run through an NFT gauntlet?
for right now, that's what I'm doing. Not anything I create, but I just photographed Andrew Yang, like we said, and like one of my images from the Andrew Yang sitting is available as an NFT. So and that's currently that's like my current main NFT right now. So it's what I think is smart to do, but I don't think that it's a necessary step. I think it's a step that I want to do. But I'm not batch NFTing my entire edit so that someone can't steal my work or anything like that.
Right. So interesting. Well, Jesse, let's wrap this up right now. We'll wrap up the podcast portion of this right now. Folks are interested in seeing that Andrew Yang shot you did in Chinatown or any of the other things that you've worked on over the past several years. What's a good location for them to hit you up at?
There's lots of places to find me, but Instagram has to be the best platform at Jesse Dittmar. And there's a link there to my NFT work. And you can go from there. You can also Google me with OpenSea. I'm very, very Googleable, Frederick, which I pride myself on. I have a website and everything, and I keep I'm always making new work. I'm always out there, you know, hustling, doing the thing and trying to meet amazing people and take good portraits and make good art of them.
Yeah, it's inspirational. I would encourage folks, if they haven't done so, go to your website. Is it jessedittmar.com, right?
That's correct.
Go to your website and get on your email list, because your emails are one of the few emails that I look forward to, because there's always another face that's familiar showing up, and it's your take on that person. And like you said, the most recent one was Andrew Yang in Chinatown. I actually want to learn about how you went about that shoot and how he was as a person. Yeah. You portray him as being very personable and just an everyman's guy, which is the way he comes off, you know, as very much like that. So yeah, I'd be curious to learn about that, but get on his list if you're not on his email list. Jesse Dittmar, thank you for coming on This Week in Photo. I appreciate it.
It's a pleasure, man. I can't wait for the next time.
This is Twip.